this went on mandatory, could they provide, or could you provide all three types of containers?
There's a cost associated with, there's a fixed cost associated with those, and normally we try and draw those out over longer periods of time. So we need to address the contract length issues, and that's one of the things we're going through with the Los Osos CSD, and the same kind of issues. One of the reasons we hesitated to include that in some of the numbers we're doing is that basically you're looking at a 14% bump right now. It probably would add 3 or 4% to the increase if you were to go to that, even if you went to mandatory, just because we're talking about 3,000 homes. We'd have to buy 6,000 carts, blue and green carts, and they run about 40 bucks a piece. They're talking about $250,000 worth of capital investment. So we have made them available to people who want the convenience of having that cart, and there are many people in the home that actually take them because they prefer them. The statistics show that you get more recycling when you provide the waste coolers for everybody because you can just throw it all in one bin and you don't have to deal with the orange crates and carrying out three different crates and all that, those kinds of things. However, you know, there is a cost associated with it, and so we felt that at the time we just didn't want to bury the citizens because it can turn a lot of people off if there's a huge increase that comes in with these as opposed to just making it available for convenience. And then after you achieve a 50% saturation rate, then you do it, and it's not nearly as bad.
Well,
see, here's the thing, and nothing derogatory against John and Mr. Trotter, but you guys say, well, we'll just roll it out to the curb. That's cool if you live in town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
You guys, what, 25 feet, 50 feet to the curb? Max, you live in Blacklick, 50 feet? Okay. Most of the people here are rural. For me to roll something out to the curb is 1,500 feet. One of those blue bins or orange bins, I can pick up and put in the back of the pickup truck. But there's no way I can pick up that roller and pick it up to the pickup truck. And if I've got a gravel driveway, there's no way I'm going to roll that bin down to the street. And once I get it down there, my driveway's like this. There's no way in hell I'm going to get it back up. That doesn't work.
Yeah, no, I mean, we still...
We're dealing with rural people here, and no offense, folks, but... The city stuff is great if you live in a city, but 90% of the people out there don't live in the city, and that isn't going to work. So I can see my little neighbor that's 88 years old trying to drag that waste wheeler 1,500 feet up a gravel driveway. That's going to kill him. And I got a tractor, but not everybody's got one of those, and I don't want to go through that ring dance either.
What I would like to propose, just so that we make some progress on this, is to lay out a sequence of issues and then first look at them one at a time. And maybe we can make some decisions on some of those today and others we can study. Is that a reasonable way of getting started?
Maybe Eagle Council can talk about the procedure we have to go through and send that sort of information to implement the mandatory.
Okay.
Yeah, ultimately, if the board was to land on mandatory garbage collection. Okay, and we're not here today to do that, but if we were to, maybe we are, if you were,
that's what it
is. If what you send out to your you have to go through a protest hearing.
Okay.
You know, it's a published protest hearing, and the protest hearing is conducted by the landowners within the district, so I want to make sure that board understands. We're not talking about the residents. We're talking about the folks that own the real property are the ones that participate in this protest hearing. But what they need in order to do the protest is the rates and charges because that's what they're protesting. But not, in a roundabout way, they're protesting mandatory garbage collection if it doesn't pass. But what they see in the protest is protesting the fees themselves. So in order to get to the true issue of mandatory garbage collection and going through the protest hearing process, you have to have the fees established for which they will protest. And so unless the board is willing to take a look at these rates right here across the board with the current service levels and say that's it, then staff has enough to go back and prepare for the protest hearing. But you know, staff has to get all the landowners, and I think that's pretty easy, probably have it on a computer, because those are the ones that get the notice. And then, again, the protest hearing itself has to be set at least 45 days after you send the notice. So there is a time component to it, too.
What does it cost the district to do an election like that?
What does it cost to mail out the bills? So you know, I'm just giving you a guess. I'd probably add $700 onto that, just to.
It should be free return.
Huh?
Free postage to return, or prepaid.
A couple thousand dollars.
Is it a ballot?
Well, there's been two different ways that I've seen this handled. One is there does not have to be a ballot. What it is a notice of a protest hearing. You only count the written protests.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so those are the only ones that you have to count. And what you have to do is weigh those written protests against the total number of protests that could have protested. So they usually pass.
I mean, for people who don't respond,
there's ones that don't respond is an affirmative vote.
Okay.
And that's the key. Oceano made a policy statement that they were actually going to send out the protest form. If you wanted to protest, sign this form and send it back. That was their, from a policy perspective. There is no requirement that you do that. All you can do is actually, what the requirements in the law is just to send out the notice. They can make up their own protest form. When you tell them how to do it, put your ATN number down and say, I protest, and send it back. You actually count the protests at the protest hearing.
Okay.
We had something about this.
Go ahead.
There's a number of people, like myself, who pick garbage at more than one place. So I don't really need mandatory garbage. That's what I'm saying. And, I mean, if you have one house, you have one can, that's kind of great. But if you own four or five houses and you're paying garbage at four or five places, or if you have a business, there's a lot of people that have businesses and pay garbage at their business, and so they don't pay garbage at their house because they take the garbage to their business and throw it in there. They're not going to be too happy with mandatory garbage, and there's got to be some kind of exception in there. If you're paying here, here, and here, you shouldn't have to pay there. Like, I don't know about Judith, whether you throw your stuff in at the business or not.
They have a business pickup, but I think mandatory is creates a monopoly and not a choice.
I don't like that either. I mean, here, when I said Napoma's going to take over garbage, cool. Now we're going to pay people, you know, mandatory garbage, and we're going to raise the rates. I don't like any part of that. And it's just, if the press is out there, put me down for no, because I mean that isn't what I had in mind. I had in mind a whole bunch of things, but I didn't have in mind mandatory garbage or jumping the rates.
Just a comment, and Bob brings up an excellent point. The jurisdictions that have gone to mandatory garbage collection have basically done it for two reasons. One is it lowers the rates throughout the district because, as Tom pointed out in the newspaper article, it reduces your fixed rates because you have more people paying into the fixed rate. The second reason, there's three reasons. That's one. Second reason, maybe more important, is more AB-939 source reduction compliant because you have everybody participating in source reduction requirements because they get all three services, garbage, green waste, and recyclables. That's the other reason. The third reason is more of the issue of community cleanup. I can't say this it's a matter of how the community perceives the community and how the board perceives the community. Because when you have mandatory garbage collection, it almost makes it impossible, not almost impossible, I don't want to say impossible, for people not to be taking care of their garbage. They, you know, they're going to have the cans out there regardless whether they use them or not. And when Oceano had their own issues and they struggled with them, but one of the things that came up was that a lot of people were using commercial dumpsters to do their, so they didn't take garbage out, so they were using the commercial dumpsters. Some people in Oceano were using their garage as a storage dumpster. Some people were using their backyard as a storage dumpster. I mean, you know, you can take a look at it from, and that's only one of three ways that you look at it. And so I think Oceano's had a very successful project in implementing that because it's addressed all three issues. You know, it lowered their rates, made it brought the district more AB 939 compliant, and it also cleaned up the area. Whether or not this board perceives all three issues the same way, of course, is up to you. But Bob brings up an excellent point. I re-emphasize it. Typically, when you go to a mandatory garbage collection, you can't custom design ordinances to meet every exception or every possible exception. And there are people that protested the Oceano experience. They didn't get enough protest votes, but everybody is successfully doing it now, and I don't know that board is receiving any complaints regarding it.
Okay, Mr. Lynn has some comments.
First, I just have a basic question. I see a rate increase here of 14.9%. Is that in our contract that it can be raised that much annually?
I think what Tom's pointing out, what Tom speaks to, but this is an accumulation over years.
But it was not completed before we took over the contract.
Right.
And therefore, a contract, an agreement to raise rates that's never completed isn't an agreement, it's a proposal.
Well, I think there's one thing that's clear is that the board has to approve any rate increase. However, there are pass-through provisions, and I don't have the contract here, so I just can't read you the provisions right off. But there are two provisions in the agreement. One is pass-through. In other words, when the haulers' rates go up at the landfill, you know, those rates get passed through to the customers. That's one. And the other one is other costs, typically through a COLA process, as labor costs go up in providing the service and other costs go up, the franchisee is entitled to a rate increase. There is a limitation, though, and that is that the rate increases have to have a rational basis. You know, that they have to be related to the actual services provided and not to the profitability of the as opposed to the profitability of the company. The other thing I can tell you is that all of my clients have gone through these rate increase cycles. And not that I'm saying this one is consistent with all the other ones, but I can tell you it's not inconsistent with the other ones. And my guess is that Mr. Seabach reviewed these rate increases for the county. Is that correct?
Yes. The Jerry did, and the board has passed them on to through the bluff. The Rio Grande, Pismo, Grover, and Oceano hired Bill Statler, the finance director for the city of San Luis Obispo, as an outside consultant to do a report because he's familiar with the rate-making technology that we use. And he issued a report, and I got half the copy of the report to Doug, but I forgot that it was double-sided. And I will present the other half of that to you. as soon as the bill gets up to me. It's been reviewed by a consultant. It's consistent with our contracts with the county and the cities that we service in this area, yes. And they have passed it on as well, all the cities have.
I would like to see the findings and the studies that were done to justify those rate increases before I was comfortable in approving a rate increase here.
So, like Tom mentioned, he passed on to me was double-sided, and I just got half the report, seemed to get the other half.
Oh, I see. Okay. Because if they agree to give a 10% raise to their employees and then turn on, say, labor costs have gone up and this is a pass-through, that's a discretionary decision that they made.
I think Tom might be in this. I'm not sure.
Might be.
Are you guys in the union?
No, we're not.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
I was questioned as a director when we took on solid waste, or we were contemplating doing it, that, what are you going to do, raise our rates? And I said, no, in our contract it says no rate increases for 5 years. Now we all, I'm not sure if we were.
No. It said no change in the contract in 5 years. But the contract allows.
Right. Well, I don't,
increases.
It should have been told. We should have been alerted.
Well, and I have a series of comments, and that's just the first one.
Okay. Is this all on mandatory?
No, this is just in terms of rating, because I would like to see the studies that were done. I understand they were made, but I need to read them and see, and be able to answer questions when people come to us and say, how did you justify this? And I don't mind answering the questions, so I know the answers. I hate to say we approved a 14% increase, and well, we took San Luis Obispo's word for it. Around here, that's not a very compelling argument.
Would I suggest maybe just continuous item until I get the full report and I make copies for the board, and we come back again to the board for discussion? Or the board can set up a committee to review everything and make some recommendations to the board.
We're all going to have to take a heat. We might as well all read it. Secondly, in the question of mandatory, I'm really sensitive to what Director Blair is saying, that we have different kinds of neighborhoods that we service. Summit Station certainly is as rural as you get. Some people live on 20 acres, some live on 5. It's not an urban service area. But I'm very strongly in support of mandatory service within areas where homes are closer together. We can say that they'll lower the rates, and of course it does raise the rates of the people that didn't have service previously, but those same people are throwing stuff off the side of the roads or throwing them over into other people's yards or coming into commercial zone here and putting in business dumpsters that don't belong to them, and a whole range of other strategies. And they're burning trash and other burnables. There's a meeting this evening at Van Elementary at 7 o'clock to talk about APCD and will there be burning allowed? And they're saying to us, which I hope is not true, that they're going to eliminate burning. For us not to have mandatory service and to deny people burning is going to create a push that's just going to end up with more trash off the side of the roads. So all of these things are connected. I don't think we can do with them. I don't think we ignore the benefits of mandatory delivery, at least within certain areas. Maybe we need to have a mandatory zone inside the larger district. I don't know if that's possible.
You should take a look at it.
Based on
looking outside of the box.
Based on density or based on zoning, I don't know. But I think common sense says that there are certain areas where there should be mandatory pickup. And I think common sense also says there are certain areas that clearly it would be excessive. And I'd like to find some way of resolving those two. Third, I really like staggering the fees so that one can goes down. As I look at it, one can goes down. The cost of cans is still, it goes up very, very slightly, but it's only when you get to 3 cans that it's very expensive. Again, what is this going to do with green waste if we're not allowed to burn? You know, it's going to get...
You have three cans of green waste right now.
Yeah.
One brain from an oak tree.
Maybe as far as the wield issues are concerned, we just need to communicate with people and let them know that if they want a wheeled recyclable container, that you're willing to supply that to them, but not change everybody over. Some of us pick up our little, I live right here in town, I just pick up my little orange basket and I move it 60 feet and I set it down and in the store. I have two of them because one isn't big enough, but I don't need a wheeled thing. So I think these are all interrelated issues, and I would like to see us come up with answers for each of them. But what you're suggesting, Mr. Seitz, is that there's a kind of sequencing to this, that if we don't set the rates first, we can't really talk about mandatory pickup?
Because it's the rates that are subject to the protest hearing.
But we don't know what the rates are until we know whether it's mandatory or not.
Well, I understand right now, whether the board doesn't do anything, we're looking at a 14% increase in rates.
And these are all pass-through.
Now, if the board wants to go to mandatory some form, then you're looking at a 5%. It's either 14 or 5, and then you can adjust those rates per can if you so desire. But if you don't do anything, you're looking at a 14.19% increase.
But we can take the franchise fee, and we can take a smaller franchise fee, and therefore...
offset some of that.
Offset some of the increase.
Correct.
Which is what we did in Black Lake and what I think people expect us to do here.
Right.
But we can't make it all go away.
No. We didn't have a franchise fee at Black Lake.
No, you just had...
We just were more efficient, so therefore we reduced the rates.
Yeah. Well, just hoping we can continue doing that. But I think that's been one of the strengths that we've had as we've talked to people about at increasing services. They knew they were going to get the same service or better at a moderate cost. And if they're going to get the same service at a higher cost, the reasonable question is, well, why did we get involved? Why didn't we just leave them alone?
Because we're going to have to increase anyway.
I understand that, but we're going to have to be able to justify the increases, mm-hmm. which means we're going to have to see the grounds for it. So I don't know if there's any action to take today. Form an ad hoc committee?
That's up to the board. And, again, I don't want to speak for Tom, but I think Tom could probably provide you with different rate scenarios, you know, for you to take a look at how to move forward. But I think the one thing the board would need to do is to get some type of collective opinion as to what you wanted to see from, you know, what different scenarios you'd want to see in order to come to a final resolution, plus the rate study.
Can we submit these other ideas to Mr. Jones, his individuals?
Well, I think that...
It would be a board collective action and then get them all...
As long as it wasn't 20 different scenarios, I think, you know, that would be
Are there any one of these issues that we can all agree on today? Sure.
I'd like to.
For example, is it possible that we would all agree to lower the franchise fee in order to offset the increase in rates? Is that something that we would all agree to do?
Yeah, I could go for that.
If so...
Yeah, I would like to correct one of my earlier statements about there isn't enough money in the kitty to do it. If you do go to mandatory, then the increase necessary is only $36,000, and you bring in more than that. So in that instance, you have enough leeway to make it zero.
But our franchise fee would disappear entirely?
No, you generate about $66,000, and $36,000 of it would have to disappear, so you lose about half of it. If I need a 5% increase and you swallow a 5% cut in franchise fee, it's a push.
Right now it's 9%, so it'd be about 4%. Right now it's a 5, 9% franchise fee. 10?
10.
Okay.
That's 10 at the county, unless you change it when
you lose half of it if the rebate passes.
If you wanted to 12.5%, then in that instance, in that specific instance, you could get somewhere very near zero.
Even if it didn't go away, even if it only went up 5% and everybody else in the county is going up 14%, we're going to look very good in the process. And
that's a good mandatory.
Well, but either way, the point is we still have a franchise fee.
Mm-hmm.
If we're willing to reduce the franchise fee in order to lower the increase, with or without mandatory pickup, that'll still be a significant difference.
Right.
Without mandatory.
Either way, there would be a less of an increase.
Can you motion on that, or just discussion?
No, I think from a policy perspective, that everybody agrees to lower it. It's a good motion. I just want to caution the board that what I would suggest that you would do is you would have Lisa run the calcs so that, how much staff, so that if when you decide how much to, I wouldn't recommend that you say how much to lower it.
No, right.
Okay.
I'm not.
We've got overhead expenses.
All I'm saying is if we agree in principle that there is some way that we would lower the franchise fee and thereby offset some of the increase.
What we could do is,
I think that's a principle then that we should explore and come up with some kind of.
What we could do is run the numbers and then you could look at the numbers and put different percentages in there and you look at. Now, one thing to remember, the franchise fees come to the district and the object is using those fees to benefit the district, maybe additional street sweeping or something like social like that.
I don't want to go away. There are things we need to do.
If you eliminate the fees, then the district doesn't have that capability of doing that service for the community.
We don't have a general fund. Those franchise fees are valuable to us.
Well, that's why.
A second thing we might all agree on in principle is that we like the notion of lowering the cost of the first wheeler and offsetting it by raising the cost of the third wheeler as a way of encouraging people to recycle more and send it more out. Now, is that?
But this first two cans still cost the same, right?
The first can would go down.
And what about the second can?
And the second can would be about the same, and the third goes up.
Yeah, because you've got young families that got like a couple kids, they're going to need two cans. So
you don't have kids, you've got two cans.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not suggesting numbers. I'm just saying the pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Do we like that pattern?
Yeah, I like that.
Because if we do then, in other words, instead of generating 50 different scenarios, maybe we can narrow these down to 15.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this proposed rate increase, you have a timetable on when that's going to be effective? Or proposed to be effective?
Everybody else has already done it, so
yesterday.
You need to do it, but... whatever it takes to get everybody happy, get everybody on the same page,
that's
the
move. Okay. Okay, so we're going to adjust. Is everybody comfortable with
that? Okay, we'll go back and run some numbers on this and come back to the board when we
can.
Good. Okay. Into that one.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Thank you, Tom.
You don't give me the rest of those documents.
Okay, other business, E1.
Oh, now you go back one. E1, yeah.
E1. Update Board of Directors bylaws. Resolution change meeting time to 9 a.m. Limit length of meeting and establish adjustability of meeting dates.
Hold the lines, I mean.
Did we go through that last time?
Yes.
Mr. President, we actually have... way from my office over here, some of the redlining got a little bit of stuff. We actually have a true redlined copy, so you can see exactly what the changes are instead of
just what came through was just the line on the right hand side and what's being passed out into the underlying area.
Mine are on italicized.
Yeah, it used to be a little bit easier.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this is,
copy for everybody?
It looks the same.
It's the same thing, but One has lines on Terry Cross, which the legal counsel mentioned, and what's in the package.
We're changing the meeting hours to 9 o'clock, too. Yeah, cool.
It's all the public left, except one person. Do you have any public comments on this, Mr. Eppert? Do you have any public comments on
this?
Yes.
Well, I haven't had a chance to listen to that, but I'll say no. Okay. On the changing the hours?
Update the board of director bylaws.
On the paper, 9 o'clock.
Any board comments?
Board comments?
Judy?
Mm-hmm.
Start off.
First, I would like to ask why we want to change the meeting again to hour, the beginning time.
Because we're going well past lunch up to 1:30 and 2.
We just changed in October from 10:30 to 9:30, and I feel that makes the 9 a.m. makes it a hardship for out-of-towners to come that are presenting.
Out-of-towners?
You know, like they're coming from, look at Boyle and all those people that have to come. I mean, we're making it more and more difficult to have participation. And look at today, we had a lot of things. We would have to, maybe we should have the meetings in the evening.
We tried that. We had
very poor turnout. Very poor. Nobody liked them.
You have meetings, you're going to lose some directors.
Yeah.
Well, not only that, we didn't get county staff. We didn't get contractors. We didn't get the seniors that don't drive after dark. We commonly had only one or two people in the audience, although we only have two at the moment. And we've had much better attendance in the daytime.
That's great.
John Snyder's the only one ever here.
Yeah, but a lot of things have changed since
then. Well, there's more interest now. If we talk about raising the rates, they'll all come back.
Do you have some comments?
I do have another. The waiver may be given by telegram. Is there a more feasible way of...
Okay, we're looking, I think Judy's looking at 2.2 special meetings, and the board had requested that we insert special meeting procedures, and what I did there is I gave you two choices to look at. Mm-hmm. Maybe that was a mistake, but one is the shorter...
He was sufficient.
Yes. A is the short version that you find in it, which basically says special. A special meeting it can only be called by the president or three members of the board of directors, and with a minimum of 24-hour notice. And that's the, and then it goes on to state the A version goes on and should be distributed pursuant to the procedures of the Brown Act. The B version, just depends how much you want to know about the Brown Act and your policies and procedures, actually goes through the Brown Act procedures.
It's not needed.
Doing a special meeting. So I gave, that's why I said, or just choose A or B, whichever version that you wanted to have in there.
I'm in favor of A, but I'm making a legal issue. I think A is better in terms of legal enforcement in that we simply cite the Brown Act. If that's amended or modified in such a way that it changes all of this verbiage in version B, we have to go back and change all of it just to stay in compliance.
That's a good point.
So wouldn't we be better off just staying in compliance with the Brown Act, and then as it's amended, we would automatically be updated?
That's fine. I think we have a provision in the back of these things that the law supersedes our bylaws, but I think you bring up a great point.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like a motion to accept variation A, Mr. President?
Well, do we just can we just speak now, or the?
Oh yeah, I think that was the idea. That's why.
Okay.
Well, 2.1.
Let's start with the 2.1 time then if we're going to do paragraph by paragraph.
Okay. Just see if everybody's in agreement. We'll just go through it.
Is there anybody that wants to change 2.1?
That should remain as is. That should remain as is.
Okay, is there general consensus of leaving at 9 o'clock then?
9:30, as it is presently.
We take a...
I think we need to take a vote.
Is this a motion?
Motion to approve.
Make a motion. We meet at 9 o'clock.
And we, Judy already made one at 9:30.
Okay, a motion.
Second.
You seconding hers?
Well, whoever.
Gosh.
Oh. She doesn't say the same thing.
Oh,
herself.
Okay. Okay. No. No. Okay. I see what you're saying. Oh, sorry.
We're in motion to have the meetings change the same, stay the same at 9:30.
Oh, okay.
Do I hear a second? Hearing none.
Bob seconded it. If it changes, it's a 9.
Yeah, right.
Eventually you all are going to lose people who are working people to be on this board, and you're making it more and more difficult for the working people to come. I mean, you might as well have it at evening, because I do believe that people will come in the evening much more than they would at this early hour.
We've played that game. It's all
for 6 years they haven't shown up. But I'm coming to these meetings now.
When did
those work for 3 years, and I was coming here for 3 years prior to that.
Maybe I could ask Mr. Sykes when the Oceano has their meetings.
The way it works right now, I think, when you take a look at it countywide, Cambria, and I don't represent Cambria, has their meetings in the Friday afternoons. The city of Pismo Beach has an afternoon meeting and an evening meeting. They've rotated. I still think they're on that same program. I haven't looked at it recently. And then this district has it at in the morning. So the board supervisors are strictly daytime meetings.
What about Los Osos?
Los Osos is evenings. I believe Oceano is evenings. I know Templeton is evenings. I don't know Heritage Ranch. And I don't know the Port.
And what kind of attendance do these meetings have?
Well, I got to tell you, the Los Osos one is well attended. That's because they're going through the sewer. But
this is a hot issue right now.
This is a board policy issue. As to when they want to establish the meetings. The only requirement is that, that you have to have it, I would suggest that you probably couldn't have it at 6 a.m. in the morning, or you couldn't have it at 12 a.m. in the morning, or 1 o'clock. But I think that you'd have to maintain it during hours when you'd reasonably expect that you would have attendance.
I'll make a motion that we change the board meeting to 9 o'clock. If that doesn't work, we can change it back again. But,
why do that? Because
9:30
works well.
2.1
has been
made to change the meeting to 9 a.m.
And
we
need to have a vote on that. Right.
She got first and second. Vote.
First and second to 9 a.m. Also, the last sentence reserves the right to cancel designate other dates and times for director meetings due to set scheduling conflicts and holidays.
Right.
I don't think we have to go through every line here. That way, it's just where there's choices.
Okay, 2.1.
2.1, right. Except it has a written.
Motion's been made by Mr. Blair, second by Mr. Wynn. Roll call vote.
Richard Blair.
Yes.
Director Wynn?
Yes.
President McGotten?
Yes.
Director Horsing?
No.
Director Trott?
Yes.
2.2, choice A or B.
I move that we choose variant A
Second.
A motion made for 2.2, change special meeting section A, which gives the time and versus Brown Act, but not.
Special
not copying the Brown Act.
Not all the details.
Well, I think this should be discussed before a motion. This is special meetings. This is something that needs to be spelled out like B to protect the people. I mean, this is local newspapers and circulation and radio and television. I mean, this could be something really important.
I think it needs to be understood that A and B mean exactly the same thing.
Right.
There's no difference at all between them. The only difference is B actually copies language out of the Brown Act, and A simply says the Brown Act.
So
the only advantage of A for me is if the state changes the Brown Act, we don't have to go back and change our language, but we will still be in compliance.
I think that B explains it purely, and I don't know what the problem with having it explained clearly like that when it's easy to change the argumentative when you can change the date, I mean the hour, but this makes it much more clear to what the people expect and what the board, they won't have to always go back and refer to the Brown Act when they want to have a special meeting.
Well, the reality is that this is not complete. It doesn't have all of the text of the Brown Act in it. Anybody that really wants to know what the Brown Act is going to have to do basic education on themselves.
Actually, all you have to do is post a meeting 24 hours in advance and come up with 72 hours. 72 hours in advance just on the door of the meeting place.
This is a 24 hour.
That's a minimum under the Brown Act.
Mm-hmm. That's for special meetings.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So second.
Okay. The motion has been made and seconded to have 2.2 section A.
Let's have a vote.
Section B. Roll call vote.
Director Brown.
Yes.
Director Blair.
Yeah.
Director Wilson.
Who?
Director Trotter.
Yeah.
President McGraw.
Yes.
Does anybody got any question any of the rest of the stuff? If not, we could just pass the rest of it, the whole thing, right?
Section 2.10, there's a note from staff say this is inserted as an example only. I propose we take that little note out. I'd hate to adopt it.
Well, I mean, the issue there is 11:30.
Oh, or do you want to go to 12?
I think 11:30 is a good time to call. In other words, 11:30, we say, look, are we going to finish this in the next half hour, or are we going to need to extend it?
So then 12 would be the cutoff? Is that what we're saying?
Mm-hmm. Well, it just says it'll... What we do, we get to 11:30, and if we're not finished at 11:30, we say, well, how much do we have to do? Are we going to keep on going, or are we going to shut it down at 12?
And that also gives us the leeway to postpone it for on the next agenda then, too?
Yeah, or you can continue the meeting.
Keep right on.
Board of Supervisors, they keep right on.
But this, the only curiosity here is that, and maybe my memory's defective, but I thought that, for example, the Board of Supervisors, I thought they had to be unanimous in order to extend the meeting time. That is, of the people that were in the meeting. And this says a majority vote.
You can excuse yourself and they can still do business as long as you got a quorum.
Right.
Somebody really had to go.
But if you say a majority vote, is that a majority vote of the five, or is that a majority vote of who's present?
No, it's three votes.
Three votes.
Okay.
Maybe you want to put in there a majority of three votes.
Well, The board can only take action
with three votes.
With three votes.
Right.
Okay. It's not a majority of the quorum. It's the majority of the board as constituted.
Okay.
Is that just sort of standard?
Yes. It's in our enabling statutes itself.
Okay.
It's in the community service district law.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Any.
So I would move that we remove the little note in the asterisk at 2.10. Just,
you know. Okay. Any other comments on this?
And accept the rest of it?
On this.
Everything else is fine for me.
Do we need a vote on this
thing? Yes. I think we're being a little hasty here.
What about
this?
Which one?
Right here on 5.2, members of the board of directors. Information may be requested from staff or exchanged between directors before meetings. Information that is requested or exchanged shall be distributed through the general manager, and all directors will receive a copy of all information being distributed. So that's okay.
That's 5.2?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we've been doing that, haven't we?
Mm-hmm. I thought so. Yeah. So let me just expand it on.
So 5.5, is that something that is going to add it?
Yes.
Yes.
So what does that mean exactly?
Well, this 5.5 comes directly out of the Brown Act, and the issue on the Brown Act that was addressed by the courts and now is addressed in the law itself was the idea of having a circular meeting. You know, what the idea is that a quorum of the board.
Maybe go ahead. Not going to make any sense.
Just grab it.
Yeah.
A quorum of the board can only meet to discuss district business at a regular or special meeting. You know, that's perfectly legitimate. And then Director B goes to Director C and says, hey, A and B is going to vote this way, and, you know, we think that, you know, that you ought to vote with us too.
Serial meeting.
It's a serial meeting. And when the Brown Act, when the California legislature came back around to address this from a case law, this is what they pointed out. It says, except during an open and public meeting, the use of direct communication, personal intermediaries, in other words, you can't send Doug around trying to pull the board, or technological devices can't use the computer to email back and forth. Remember, to develop a collective concurrence as to action to be taken on an item by the board of directors. And that's the key phrase. If you were going to circle anything, I would circle develop a collective concurrence. You know, I mean, that's the key phrase there. And if you can't, you know, that's what's prohibited. The idea is that you carry on your public debate regarding items that are on the agenda where you're sitting right now at the dais and not behind closed doors.
Okay, thank you. 6.4, authority of directors.
Yes.
Generally, the president is the designated representative of the board of directors to communicate established district policy and positions to the public or other governmental agencies. I guess last Thursday they had a meeting talking about the summit station, and Mr. Wynn and Mr. Blair were there. And did you all represent the district?
No.
As individuals or?
Actually, I was called by the planning commission and asked if I would come to explain what our annexation policies were and the history, how that worked. So it was only for informational purposes only.
But should that not have gone through the president?
President?
Mm-hmm.
We, did you know, you knew about that? No.
This?
No, but this policy, I mean, this is not a
policy. This is a, and I think Judy brings up a good point, this is a real struggle issue right here. And and when it was first discussed with the board, they sort of landed on something that was more narrow than this. You know, that that what was discussed as a member of the board should not be discussing our business unless they get the approval of the president. And I really struggled with this language. I didn't want to make it a fast rule. And this is just a policy, because I personally believe that you as directors, should be able to express publicly or any place what you perceive what the policy of the board to be. I think that the issue that the board wanted to address with this issue is there a firm understanding as to what our policies are? That to me, that's the more difficult issue. I mean, it's easy for somebody to get up and say, I think this is what the policy is. That's one statement. The other policy statement is, this is the policy of the board. And the problem that you all face, and believe me, it's a human problem. It's not a problem because you set the board, is actually knowing, being able to articulate with some degree of certainty as to really what that policy is. There's 100 examples, as to what is our policy towards Woodlands. I mean, I don't want to discuss it here, but I think that if you were to pull all five of you, my guess is I'd come up with at least three variations of what that policy is. And
the other two would be wrong.
The other two would be wrong, exactly. And so the struggle is really having everybody have a firm understanding of what those policies are.
Well, I think the paragraph 6.1 is probably more explicit anyway, though.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because a thing came up a couple years ago where people were saying things and they weren't saying as a member of the public or a member of the board, and people were assuming that they were speaking because they were sitting on the board instead of a public person speaking as a public person can do. And they weren't establishing policy, they were just stating their opinions.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
In which everybody can do it. Any comment is having your opinion. But I think you can't set, I think,
you can give a disclaimer first, too.
Yeah,
get up and
but
say,
you can't set a policy saying the board will, no matter what you're doing.
Or, and I think the more difficult one is what is the board's policy towards specific projects? And this has been, to me, a motion within the last 4 months that you can really pin your brain on. I mean, really remember and articulate. It just becomes very difficult. But on the other hand, in a way, you're kind of charged with that obligation. I mean, if somebody comes up to you and says, what is the board's policy? I mean, your response is, we haven't addressed that issue in the last 6 months, so I really can't tell you exactly what the policy is.
I've been using the term, it's my interpretation.
That's a good, that's an excellent.
No, that's what I tried.
Yeah.
The bright line I tried to hold on talking to these groups is that I never advocate some decision on behalf of this board, because that's the requirement of the board. But if they're confused about policy or they don't know how the board works, then we can answer questions of information, but not to encourage them to do something. For example, they were under the impression, at least some of the planning commission were under the impression, that they could, by voting, annex part of this area into some station and require us to provide water service. And, of course, they don't have the authority to do that. So we had to explain that they do the planning side, but there had been no application made to us to be annexed, and therefore we have not considered that. And they needed to understand that. But I didn't tell them do annex or don't annex in the sense that that's not our job.
So what was Mr. Blair's job?
I told him I was a homeowner. I was there as a homeowner. Mm-hmm. Because I was representing myself and my own personal views as a homeowner.
The problem we all face, and I think Judy's alluding to it, and you can say otherwise if I'm putting words in your mouth. If Roy Banducci, the town barber, goes to the Board of Supervisors and says, I live in the NCSB and here's what I think ought to happen, they understand he's a private citizen. And they're going to listen to him politely and give such weight as his arguments merit. If I go in there and I say, I'm speaking as a homeowner today and not, you know, and they still know I'm a director here. And that still influences the way they listen. And I'm not convinced that if we went to any one of those board members and said, you've heard Mike Lynn talk 10 times in the last 6 months. How many of those was he speaking as a private individual?
20 times. 20.
Well, easy, but I was throwing out a number. How many of those times did he give a disclaimer and how many times was he speaking for the district? They wouldn't be able to tell you. So, I mean, I'm what John is saying. I think we're individually all required to be able to give a clear explanation of policy or admit that we're confused and we don't understand our own policy.
Well, policy or opinions. I mean, with words go back and forth here, you'd have to have a tape recorder and find out what everybody's opinion is, find out the opinion of the board. But they have a general consensus whether the board likes or dislikes the project, we put it that way. If they vote on it, it's definite. But, for instance, the one on the other side of Black Lake, the Craig property, I think the board took a vote on that last year, 2 years ago, that they would look on it favorably. Cypress Ridge, it's a subdivision, we had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, but we took a position.
Yeah, we took a position. The Woodlands, the board took a position 20 years ago. And I don't like 6-4 itself.
You like it or you
don't?
Believe me, I struggled with 6.4. It's probably the smallest sentence in the amendments, and it's probably the one I spent the most time on. Because, the board gave us instructions to put something in there and, regarding talking to it, and that's what I put in there, and if you guys strike it out, I am not going, or modify it, as long as you don't modify it to more restrictive, I'm not going to be
The original text that was given to you said the president or his designee.
Right, but I thought about that.
I'm saying is the original was the idea was to open it up in some sense, not to restrict it.
But wonder if, let's just say we had a director or directors that had a conflicting view as to what the president says, and then what that director says, Mr. President, can it's okay if I state this view at this meeting, and the president says no, no longer designated. And that was how my mind was working when I thought, that's really not, A is I don't think it's enforceable, and B is it would put a minority director in a position of needing permission to...
Yeah. It gags minority members.
Yeah. This reflects the official position. If the director has asked something, he may say, or she may say, in my interpretation, then...
Yeah,
Doesn't that remedy this problem?
I think it does. Or it goes, it gets us down 90% of it.
See, I feel that this one here requires, of course, I shouldn't say I should be out there talking.
Or do you want to delete it?
Because it requires the president, whoever he or she happens to be at that time, to attend every function going on in the county. Mm-hmm. Which I don't believe is a job of the board to be represented at every function of the county unless there's a specific thing coming up that affects the district.
Strike it. Move to strike 6.4 from the draft.
Second.
We have a motion made to strike 6.4 from the draft. Any other comments? Roll call vote.
Director Ramey?
Yes.
Director Blair?
Yep.
Director Worsing?
Yes.
Director Trotter?
Yes.
Director
O'Brien? Yes. Cool. Go ahead. Any other things on this particular? So I'm looking for a motion.
I make a motion that we accept the rest of it as written.
Attachment A to resolution
809.
Resolution of the Board of Directors of the Community Service District establishing the new board.
Oh, I do have a question. I'm sorry, of this page.
This page.
And it says appoint, whereas it would be the resolution of the board, and whereas the board of directors.
Where's more where?
Right, it's the page 2.
Warrants.
You know, after E1 it would be the next
signature
page.
Signature page.
With this point credit for annual review and readoption of the director bylaws, to receive a 1 point credit, I just need to have this explained.
Oh, okay.
That's on the insurance.
Right. What we belong to SDMRA, and SDMRA has a program where you get reductions in your insurance policy premiums if the district takes certain proactive steps. I think what it does is it reduces your loss. And so this is one example of what's in our insurance policy. If we go through this review with the Board of Directors on a yearly basis, we get a 1 point credit. And I think we also get credits if we do safety meetings with our employees, and Lisa's a real whiz on this. But we get a lot of insurance credits if we take certain steps, and this is what we're talking about here.
Motion is made and seconded. I'll get those words out, yeah. On resolution 2002-809. We have a roll call vote.
I'm sorry, I missed the second.
Yeah.
Who did it?
Tom Blair made and seconded.
Thank you.
Excuse me.
Director Blair?
Yes.
Director Wayne?
Yes.
Director Worsen?
Yes.
President
LeBlanc. Yes. Moving right along. Consent agenda, warrants and board meeting minutes. A bunch of them. On the 23rd of January and February 20th. And I guess everybody got copies of the warrants. Any questions or additions or changes to
I make a motion to accept the consent agenda.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to accept the consent agenda as written F1 and F2. Any public comments? No public comments. I'll bring them back to the board. Any board comments? Motion is made and seconded. I have no trouble. All right, please go ahead.
I was just going to confirm that attachment that was there.
On the checks.
I guess I lost it.
Well, I just looked at the ones. That's the only thing that came in.
Yeah, it
is. Yeah. So I have a roll call vote.
Director Blair?
Yes.
Director Wynn?
Yes.
Director Wilson?
Yes.
Director Carr?
Yes.
President Obama?
Yes.
I've got them.
Okay, manager's report, mission statement.
Yeah, President, board is considering a mission statement, and we've got a couple of ones to give you a number of other statements that other people have. We've got to make it simple as possible so others get more voluminous. And if the board may modify change or change their own.
Silence from the board.
Well, the simplest one would be probably B.
Yeah, A is grammatically leaves a couple of things hanging, but
others specify services, and I make a blank because whatever services we may obtain, I can apply to.
In a workshop that I attended, a little over a year ago, there was discussion of these, and one of the things they warned us against was don't list individual services, because then every time you add a service, you have to go back and amend your mission statement.
Yeah, that's why I did it.
Yeah.
I have a suggestion. It says, innovative and economic basis required, and then the word required.
The language again?
Add the word required after vision.
I'm sorry. Are you on I? Are you on B? You're on A.
Oh. I'm on A. I know you're on B.
Oh. If I were doing it B, I would take the word innovative out. Not that I'm opposed to innovation at all. It's simply I don't know that a service that has been provided well in an established format needs to have less preference than a new way of doing it if the new way is not better.
Bring this up again for the next. I'm studying so much, I didn't really have time to go into this like I would like to.
There's no timetable, and the board can just table this for next time.
What, this is an agenda item?
I can just put it back on as agenda or in the manager's report, either one.
We're not supposed to take any action on it today anyway.
No, the manager's report.
Yeah. So it could come back for adoption.
Come back as an agenda item?
Yeah.
Okay, let's bring back an agenda item.
Can I say in passing that generally I think we'd be better off having the mission statement as a sentence? Instead of just a phrase.
Yeah, well, why don't you submit your recommendations and we can incorporate it into the...
I mean, there are a number of examples given here that you gave us, which I appreciate. Mm-hmm. Normally a statement would have a subject and a verb at the end of the period.
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
You made an email, I did it. Okay.
Also, for the board information, there's the annual AWWA conference. Brochure, and then the last time passed out the one for the local one, and it was up in San Jose. And then also there's the report on the Robinson, which the board of
the planning commission approved the conditions of Summit Station to incorporate into the Robinson annexation, or Robinson's proposed amendment. It's interesting because the Summit Station regulation says it shall not, the boundary shall not be changed, and therefore they changed the boundaries of the Summit Station area. But, and some people felt that if one change has occurred, other changes can occur.
Well, a special meeting we had with Concho, he said that these could be addressed when this comes back to the board, so maybe that will be.
Yeah, this is information. Here again, this is a precursor of a possible annexation. What I brought to the planning commission, if the water line runs down on the edge of the property, the area across the street should be annexed to the district also because they're getting the benefit of the water line. And there's a dichotomy there because then on one side of the street would have restrictions, on the other side they would not have restrictions. And that's what I'm trying to point out to the planning department. But, yeah. And then there's a bunch of stuff for board's information. That's all I have, Mr. President.
Okay.
Is there any, when does this come back to board supervisors, does it?
It'll probably be scheduled sometime.
May I ask you a question, Mr. Bowles? Were you in favor of this?
What?
The Summit Station annexation, or you know, the adding on to the other lots, the lot lots.
There was about 60 people sent letters besides me, and the general conception up there is, if we can have our own full right to the water, granny house, then I don't mind those people hooking on. But the county seems to have the idea that these eight people won't make any difference, and they have granny houses. But somehow my having a granny house is going to impact the whole county. I got a problem with that. Mm-hmm. And there's people up there who are very much interested in seeking a legal solution if the county doesn't do what they're supposed to. So we'll see what they do. I'm in favor if the county will take the restrictions off, then they can hook up anybody they want.
The county was requested from the previous supervisor over 4 years ago to look at lifting the land division up there.
Right.
And the planning department has been sitting on it for 4 years.
They're trying to say that you need an environmental impact study.
They don't want to do that because it's going to cost them some money.
Right. And the thing is, what we're asking for is the normal zoning. So if that's our normal zoning, there's no reason why we should have an environmental impact study to see if what's normal. I mean, that's contradictory right there.
I believe every time you have a general plan change, you have to address that.
I guess, yeah. Anyhow.
The staff preparation for this was very poor. On one page, they said 8 parcels. On the same page, they said 9 parcels. When I brought a map and showed them 10 parcels, one of which straddles Lynn Road, they fussed around and shot from the hip. They said, oh, well, these tax maps aren't very accurate. It probably doesn't straddle the road. And as it happened, the owner of the parcel was there and said, yes, it in fact does straddle the road. They're going to do their work. But much of what they're doing is planning, really is not within our purview. So I don't know that we need to have an opinion on whether this is annexed or not. Our important thing is for them to understand that they cannot simply tell us, you will give these people water, and these are the circumstances you'll give it to. That's the county cannot do that.
Yeah, this is information I have for the board.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get Mr. Blair's opinion since he lives
there. And the other thing that the one planner has done before is she's referred to the water up there as temporary emergency water. She says, well, those people have temporary emergency water. Once you pay the $16,000, temporary emergency is over. You're part of the district. And she doesn't seem to understand that. And I don't know how you can make her understand that. But she thinks that we're some kind of special part of the district that once the drought's over and our wells all recover, that it's all going to go away. That necessarily isn't the case.
Okay, any committee reports? any committee reports?
We have a personnel policy draft, which has been given to staff. I would like for it to come to the board for discussion.
Actually, my staff just reviewed it, and we, the staff, if it's okay with the board, we would like to meet with the personnel committee before it comes back to the board.
Sure.
And we've just finished our review of it Monday, so we're prepared to kind of arrange a meeting with the personnel committee.
I'd like to place on the agenda the discussion of the videotaping meetings and using funds from the antenna funds. We could discuss that.
What was that? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, Jim.
To put on the agenda to discuss the videotaping of the meetings and using the antenna funds.
For that purpose?
Yeah. Yeah.
TV and board meetings at the Chicago.
Since we can't have evening meetings, maybe we could have it. Because I've heard a lot of people were really very interested in those. Not what we look like, but what we have to say.
Yeah, around the district.
Well, a lot of the people that I talked to lived here.
It would be nice because then you wouldn't see the reruns of Rory Granny all the time.
Okay. Any other committees? Any director's comments?
I am so supportive of it. One, I just remind the board that tonight at 7 o'clock at Dan Elementary will be a discussion on the APCD. And talking about burning policies. Most of the people that are coming from APZB are urban people who do not live in our kind of community, and the policies that they come up with are not very practical for our neighborhoods, and I think it's really important that people show up and speak their piece. I will not be there tonight. This is my wedding anniversary, 26 years, and since I forgot last year, it would not be wise for me to do it 2 years in a row, so I'm going out for a dinner with Fred Crow, I think. But anyway, I will not be able to be there this evening, but I would encourage others to be there. Secondly, in terms of a small humiliation, I'm sitting in the advisory council meeting in this building here last Monday night or so, and next to Mrs. DePue from the OCMR School District, and during a not very enlightening part of the meeting. We were sort of glancing up the sky and waiting for the topic to change. And looking at this ceiling, she says, you guys ever paint this thing? And
no, that thing's throwing grease is what it is. That fan's throwing grease.
And I don't know what that is, but I don't really think it's grease.
No, it isn't either.
We're addressing it. The architect's supposed to bring back some submittals, and we're looking at putting a bin up there or something like that.
Okay. I think it's just moisture that collects
there. Yeah, it's kind of mold.
That's mold.
Mold, yeah.
It's all hot.
Anyway, I bring it up as a thoroughly trivial topic, which...
We're aware of it. I'm trying to...
Correct. Okay, thank you. And then we also have are still looking at our policies on use of buildings and such.
Okay.
Which we need to be bringing back to the board to discuss. And another policy or at least a suggestion that I had. This is where Sam and I serve on the water subcommittee. And we've looked at supplemental sources and other such things when it was appropriate. But the question of supply continues to be raised here. And possibly it would be useful for us to get together all of the different studies that's been made And it would be nice, I think, just as a suggestion, and we won't discuss the debate, but my comments I'd like to suggest that we just try to see if we can make up a one-page summary, or at the most a two-page summary, of each of the sources, when it came out, what degree of reliability we assigned to it, what its weaknesses are, what its strengths are, and what the bottom line is as far as supply for each of those, so that we all had them laid out in front of us. I think our subcommittee would be appropriate to do that.
And the dates the studies were made.
Yes, the dates.
That's critical.
Yes, it is. Now, we do have a lot of this material, but unfortunately, people come to us and ask, and we say, well, here, study this and come back and we'll talk. It would be useful to have a summary. And we might not agree about the summaries. We might have a, well, since there were two, so we'd have two minority reports.
On this subject, we'd like to call a special board meeting on next week, Thursday, week from tomorrow, at 1:30 afternoon, where our legal counsel will come up, hopefully with his engineer and other documentation, and basically go over this particular item about the basin's current lawsuits and the status of it. If the board is available on the 14th at 1:30 p.m., we'll set up a special meeting. Mr. Mark will be here and probably bring maybe one of the assistants, and we'll try and get Bill Dendy here. He's one of the engineers. And go over the whole details and bring the board up to speed with the litigation. I put in the board just a kind of an email that just covered a lot of the lawsuits just to give you some background.
I appreciate that, and I have to say that he answers all my questions when he's here, and I listen to his explanations, and I generally agree with what he says, but for public information purposes, what we usually do not have.
Well, maybe after this meeting, you'll understand better and you know, put the packages together that basically needs to be put together.
If he can sweat it down to one page, he'll have my tremendous admiration.
Is all board members available on the 14th? 1:30? Okay, we'll sit on a note.
Said I had to be here, so I had to.
Well, I think what staff is anticipating is a closed session.
Yeah, it'll be a closed session.
So.
Yeah. Can I make one quick comment?
But let me make it clear that although we're talking about closed session, which I understand there's things there that we cannot discuss, I would like to have a public document, one that's cleared for publication.
I would suggest maybe talk that over with Mr. Markman at this meeting.
Okay, good. Because we often have genuine disagreements of understanding, and it would be helpful for us all to get on the same page.
Well, yes, but it'd also be nice if you're starting to talk about water operations and the district and everything else to secure with our water attorney, because we have litigation going on. This
I know.
Right.
I know. But the studies, at least, are public studies.
Just a couple of quick things. One, the ladies told me that they had a meeting here from the Transportation Committee. They left the restrooms in deplorable condition. And they had to go in there and clean them. I think when we're going to get into this meeting room, if these people are going to leave this place a mess, they need to make a deposit. These people didn't hire on to clean restrooms. There's no excuse for that. And it was the ladies' restroom. It was the worst. That's just a fact. And the other thing is, Save the Mesa, their meetings are now open to the general public. They used to be like, call and we'll see if you can come. But now they have their meetings at Creekside. I went to Saturday with Gene Melskow. It was very interesting. They kind of looked at me kind of funny when I walked in. But after they got used to me being there for a minute, it was like, God, the devil's here. But one of them asked me, he said, why are you coming? I said, well, I represent all you people, whether you voted for me or not. I just wanted to hear what you had to say. But anyhow, their meetings are on a Saturday at 1:30 at Creekside. So if you want to go, sometimes some of the stuff they got there.
Every Saturday?
First Saturday. First or third or something like that. But anyhow, yeah, it was kind of interesting. Okay.
I think they were always open to public.
No.
A couple times I called up and said,
well, yeah, they were probably somebody's house.
It was at somebody's
house. Always somebody's house.
They didn't say I couldn't.
Oh, okay. Any other comments from directors before we go into the second?
Are you going to say Sunday night or evening?
Yes. Now we will close the record session, and you want to take a 5-minute break before we go into closed session?
Yeah, we'll be going into closed session. I've just discussed two items that are on the agenda. That will be the Save the Mesa versus the Pomo Community Service District and the waterline easement. That's conference with real property negotiator. Both of them are pursuant to Government Code Section 549.56.9. And Government Code Section 54956.8.